Well, good afternoon and welcome to the TNT Hour on BBSRadio.com. Now a weekly Wednesday afternoon show, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. on the East Coast, 3 Central, 2 Mountain. Welcome to all the listening audience. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. I do have a special guest today, and we're going to be discussing a variety of things that are going on around the world, particularly in light of some recent vice presidential nominations that are occurring, and try to make some sense out of what's going on. I find that there are some amazingly similar anomalies between one of the presidential candidates and a vice presidential candidate in their backgrounds. We have this recurring story of how the families got together, which is just amazing. And so we're going to try to bring some sense to this. Of course, you're going to hear some things that you will not hear on mainstream news, at least from the perspective that we're going to approach some of these topics today. We're not asking anyone to believe what we say. Do some research for yourselves and see if you don't arrive at the same conclusions. And in the meantime, I would like to bring on the TNT Hour special guest and sort of a co-host right now, Mr. Chris Hinckley. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Don. My pleasure, as always.
Chris, you and I had an opportunity to talk earlier today, off the air, of course, about some of the things that are going on in the campaigns and just in politics in general. You know that I've been working on a piece which is coming out in this month's edition of the Idaho Observer. In fact, I'm told that it's going to go to press on the 8th of September for sure. We've moved this date around a little bit to accommodate certain events that have transpired in our personal lives, as well as just keeping pace with the astronomical amount of news that's coming forward and having to make decisions as to whether or not we were going to alert people to the so-called bird flu pandemic, the Spanish flu revival, a vaccine, if you want to call it that, something that goes all the way back to 1918. And, of course, we've discerned that much of this is part of Agenda 21, if you want to call it that, this New World Order plan to eradicate the population through the spreading of laboratory-created diseases and what other evils they can conjure up. And then we've got these anomalies going on now with presidential, vice president picks. And in particular, I'm referring to John McCain's pick. And you brought an interview to my attention, and I'd like to discuss that a little bit off the top. Do you have any general comments you'd like to make before we dive into this?
I'm frantically grabbing supporting documentation as you're talking, and no general comments other than the evidence is overwhelming, just as retired Air Force Colonel Sam Gardner said. And I keep going back to, I had a conversation, as I mentioned, with Ralph Epperson yesterday, and I keep trying to go back in light of all of the information, the flood, as you said, that's coming out. I keep trying to go back to the source documentation that was put out ahead of all of this stuff that is happening. And so my question to anyone is, when you look at these kinds of things, you know, like you said, Agenda 21, or even going back to, for example, the civil disturbance planning, which was the military training and police training to suppress the opposition in America, and the master plan of the DOD civil disturbance plan was actually the DOD civil disturbance plan 55-2, which was the, you know, code name, as we all know, back to 68. But coming forward from that, you know, you keep finding these different reports and documentation and books and things that are put out by Rand and mm-hmm. Brookings and Heritage and, you know, all the think tanks that come out. In fact, Rand itself was created just a few months before the NSA, the National Security Act. And ever since then, they've been prophetic in putting out documentation about what's just around the corner. So are they prophets, or is there something else going on? Anyway, that's kind of hopefully that's succinct enough, but I apologize if it's verbose.
No, that's fine. You're bringing up some good points, and they're all really applicable. They're all relative to what's going on. We see various directors or associate directors of the RAND Corporation on C-SPAN or on major network news from time to time. And these are the so-called experts that know what's going on around the world. And what they don't tell the viewing audience or the listening audience when they appear on radio shows is that these people are part of the military-industrial complex. They're the general contractors. They're even involved in the construction of underground bases. And many of these very sadistic laboratories that are built in places like Area 51, just as a quick example. You have multiple levels of research going on in underground facilities that are conducting all types of sadistic genetic research. There have been enough people coming out talking about that. In fact, I have a guest on the Evident Footprints show tonight that's going to be talking about that very issue. So the RAND Corporation is not who they say they are, at least, you know, in terms of what we're fed as part of the everyday plat du jour, if you want to call it that, of media propaganda. And as we know from Dumb and Dumber, the plat du jour is the plate of the day. So, or what we would colloquially call the daily special. So that said, your point is well taken. And you mentioned the Brookings Institution and all of these think tanks. They're just more of the same, gauging public opinion, putting forth their assessment of what moves the government needs to make. And one that really sticks out in my mind is the Project for a New American Century. Mm-hmm. Their documentation led up to all the events on 9/11 and the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and what's going on in Iran and elsewhere. And it's all really masking massive money laundering, which, you know, we've talked about ad nauseum.
Yeah.
to bring us back to this topic, I think the choice of Sarah Palin as the vice presidential running mate of John McCain is rather anomalous. And when you look at the background, Wikipedia's got a very detailed article up there, and it looks like they didn't waste any time getting it up there.
I agree.
Looking at her political career, John McCain, as we will be discussing, seems to know quite a bit about her, as if he's always known her. You get the feeling he's known her her whole life, or his whole life.
Well, she's a soulmate and a partner, right?
Isn't that what he said? Yeah, exactly. we're gonna come to that. But I did a quick check, just a quick check, and Wikipedia by no means is my pick for accurate information, especially when it comes to these genealogical issues that are involving the political candidates. But I already see a similarity in the story. You know, she's born in Sandpoint, Idaho. Let's presume that that's true right now, okay? And her father was a science teacher and a track coach. When she was an infant, the family moved to Alaska. It's a recurring theme. All of these political families move when their children are infants. Now, what would provoke them to move up to Alaska? I don't know. But then she ends up marrying someone, again, in the oil industry or with connections to BP. And her marriage, like John Sidney McCain's father, who we would call John Sidney McCain Sr., was an elopement, as was Barack Obama's grandparents' wedding, Madeline Payne and Stanley Armour Dunham. There was an elopement there. Why is it, do you think, that their parents are against them marrying the people they're marrying? I mean, have you ever heard so many instances of famous people whose parents were against these families being created? And then having them have this phenomenal success of achieving the pinnacle of power in the political arena.
Anyone can become president, right?
Well, that's what they tell us. As long as you're hooked up, as long as you've eloped,
right,
and you can't prove your family's ancestry, and then as long as somebody in the family works for an oil company.
And your family has moved at some point when you're, you know, before you're about 48 months of age, right?
Yes, exactly. Usually it's within 3 years. Here we have another infant situation. it's just more it's more obfuscation. Now, am I attacking the character of Sarah Palin? No, that's not what I'm doing. But I'm not already. The story's not making sense.
Although, on the contrary, you haven't even mentioned her character. That's not even an issue. You haven't even crossed that bridge, so to speak. So obviously, you're not doing that, I would say.
Yeah. But I intend. You know, It's kind of interesting. She attended Hawaii Pacific College, which is now Hawaii Pacific University, in Honolulu. I find that extremely coincidental that that's supposedly where Barack Obama's mother attended school, and his father. Now, what is the situation with these schools in Hawaii? Is it because Hawaii is so far out of the way and inaccessible to most people that there can be, let's say, some specialized grooming program for these political candidates that's going on, much like Mercer Island High School and Stanley Ann Dunham. This will make much more sense to people when they read my Obama article, I'm sure. But I'm sort of just drawing parallels in these stories, and these people all are fitting the same pattern. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, as you said, Wikipedia is not the end-all, be-all in terms of source documentation. I like to use it because it's as innocuous and inert as as possible, in the sense that anyone can change it, and it's open to, you know, public modification. So if there's a gross, you know, if there's something that's grossly erroneous in it, obviously it won't last, and the site moderator or moderators are able to change that as well. So my point is that just by going to Wikipedia, as you mentioned, it seems I looked the within moments after the announcement, and what's interesting is there's a massive amount of information that's been smithed and resmithed in the days after the announcement, but I don't see anything really prior to that, and so my point is getting back to exactly what you're saying. You know, is it possible? You know, sure, maybe no one took the time to put that information out. I would challenge that because you can find information on just about anything. You know, you can search in Wikipedia and find information on the strangest subject matter. You know, search Wikipedia for things like mating call of the sap-sucking mucus worm, and you come up with results. But to suggest that the governor of Alaska doesn't have some kind of a page on Wikipedia, and she's been in office up there for some time and in varying capacities, you know, mayor, governor, et cetera, is you know, strange. And so, like I said, hundreds and hundreds of revisions since the announcement was made, but I'm not even aware that there was anything up. I'm actually looking right now. I mean, literally.
Notice the article is locked. Do you notice that?
Yep. And there are thousands of revisions just in the last, well, less than a week, since the 29th. Literally thousands of revisions. Going back to May and June, there were some entries, very little, May, June, July, beginning of August, but then, of course, subsequent to the announcement, thousands of revisions. So it's interesting, you know, and of course we can go back in and look at those edits, and it's interesting to go back specifically, you know, like you said, it's curious. I think Wikipedia is a fun tool. I hope I'm being succinct enough, because it's open to the public, but, you know, in this case, as you said, now it's locked. But you can go back and look at the revisions and the talk, the ad, you know, of the talk back in late August of vice presidential prospects and things. It seems to me, I guess the bottom line, I don't want to do too much nose leading, but, you know, it seems to me that a lot of this was crafted intentionally with a purpose.
Yes. I'm seeing a lot of information that really has nothing to do with qualifications here. And I'm just sensing that this is very, very misleading. It's intended to give the appearance that there's a ton of information here that would support this nomination, this choice, as a possible future president of the United States.
Right.
You know, were McCain to die in office for some reason, and I don't wish that upon anyone, but let's say if he were to become elected and suffer some unforeseen fate, and you know, she would be next in line. Now, on what basis? I also noticed in just looking at this connection with Hawaii that she was not there very long, and that she transferred to Northern Idaho. And that leads me to ask the question, why?
Yeah, U of I.
Yeah. It smacks of you know, the similar modus operandi that I've seen in so many of the other historical bibliographies that I've read about these candidates. And you know well my feelings about McCain and his ineligibility to run Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Palin's not eligible to run, but she's certainly not eligible to run with someone who's not eligible to run.
Right.
It's common sense. And there is quite a bit of obfuscation. And as soon as I looked at her husband. Okay, how did she get the name Palin? Well, she married a man by the name of Todd Palin, who happened just so happened to work for BP.
Mm-hmm.
It leads one to think that everybody works for an oil company, and or anyone of prominence has some connection to an oil company. And of course, that mirrors the association with the British Crown. Mm-hmm. I mean, BP stands for British Petroleum. Let's not kid ourselves. Who runs and owns British Petroleum? And the McCain background directly ties him directly. And I don't mean via some ancestry in the United States to the King of England. That should be cause for alarm.
Yeah.
You were going to say something before I went on.
Well, on July 10th, Richard Baer published an article in Real Clear Politics titled "How McCain Could Win." It's one of the citations that was made early on, July 11th, actually. I guess early on in light of the announcement. But mainstream media has been playing. I've seen the clip a few times of, I believe it was last December, that Sarah Palin was interviewed, specifically asked, you know, would you entertain the notion of the vice presidency? And she said she had no plans. Obviously, it could have been political posturing because she was governor then. She wouldn't want to alienate her constituency. I could see how that argument could be made, even though talks were underway. But what was interesting is that, you know, after that, this discussion starts coming up. And in the article, there's a section toward the end titled "Deep Stakes," and this is what Richard Baer says in that section. So who would help the ticket most as a VP selection? And first, on his list, he says one interesting choice would be Alaska's very popular governor, Sarah Palin. She would be an immediate media sensation and rob the Obama campaign of its monopoly of saturation media infatuation. Given the way the media was perceived to have ganged up on Hillary Clinton, there might be much greater care about avoiding doing it again with Palin. Of course, Palin would be challenged for her youth and inexperience in foreign policy matters. And speaking of that, I thought it was interesting. Today, Ben Stein was on, I think, MSNBC, and he said that she should be babysat by Henry Kissinger. That's a frightening thought. But
Man.
So Richard Baer goes on and he says, but the reality is that Palin, unlike almost all U.S. senators, including Obama, has actually run something. With an 84% approval for her job as governor, seems to be running it well. Then he mentions Jimmy Carter, which I think might be telling, might not, might be reading into that. Jimmy Carter, Michael Dukakis, and Bill Clinton all ran for president directly from service as governor. Raising the experience issue with Palin would be a risky strategy for Obama. After all, Palin would only be running for the second spot, and Obama, with arguably less of a track record, is running for the top spot. Palin would also be very effective in helping focus the energy issue and the need to explore and drill for what we have in this country. She could take McCain to Anwar and give him reason to shift on that issue. Anyway, I thought that was interesting, and that's one of a few, I don't know, telltale articles. It's interesting that Richard Baer mentions her first.
Mm-hmm. Now, your point's well taken and very perceptive. Let me refer to the article that you forwarded to me, which is the Chris Wallace interview on Fox News Sunday. Entitled "John McCain Roundtable," and he makes some very interesting comments. And I'm going to read an excerpt of this and listen to the language that's being used here. Chris Wallace starts off by asking, let's start with your choice of running mate. Of all the people you could have chosen, of all the Republican leaders you've known for years, straight talk, can you honestly say that Sarah Palin is the best person to put a heartbeat away from the presidency? McCain responds, oh, yes, she's a partner and a soulmate. She's a reformer. I don't particularly enjoy the label maverick, but when someone, when somebody takes on the old bulls in her own party, now keep in mind that that sticks out a little bit. It's his party too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do people do when they challenge an incumbent in an election? They take on someone possibly in their own party, right? Or another candidate that might be running. And generally speaking, there's more than one candidate involved in a gubernatorial campaign. So he says, takes on the old bulls in her own party, runs against an incumbent governor of her own party, stands up against the oil and gas interests. I mean, they really are so vital to the economy of her, of the state of Alaska. I mean, it's remarkable. It's a remarkable person. Now, there's a lot of disinformation in that one paragraph. He says, stands up against the oil and gas interests, yet she marries a guy that works for BP Oil. Doesn't sound like she's standing up against the oil companies at all. BP has control of the Alaska pipeline, and within months after taking control of it, what do? They shut it down. Lindsay Williams, who has been on my Evident Footprints show, has discussed the issue of a non-oil or a non-energy crisis, that it's all a ruse, and he's been putting that word out since the early to mid-1970s, and recently retired a couple of months ago under threatening circumstances for putting this message out. So there's quite a bit of disinformation and spin in that one paragraph. Then mm-hmm. he goes on to say, and I've watched her record, and I've watched her for many, many years as she implemented ethics and lobbying reforms. And I mean, she led on it. She didn't just vote for it, she led it. I've seen her take on her own party. Again, he refers to her own party. And then in the next sentence, again, now look, one thing I know is that when you take on your own party in Washington, you pay a price for it. You do. You pay a price for it. And she has taken on the party in her own state. She took on the sitting governor and defeated him. How many times has he said her own party, as if this is something exclusive to her alone?
Mm-hmm.
It's belying some sort of courage that she's exemplified, that she's displayed, and it's not at all alluding to the fact that she was appointed, that she was chosen by someone else. And so to justify this, he's painting this scenario of somebody that's waged all these political battles. It doesn't work that way. And I can tell you that's the same way McCain rose to the level he's risen to in politics. It's because of who he is related to. And that's not just in business. That's, you know, literally the bloodline
mm-hmm.
there. These people don't make it to that position by accident. I'm sure you'd probably agree.
Absolutely. And so that begs the question. What is the relation? You know, what is the relation? And going even further, you know, I don't want to read into it, but you know, the remark that she's a partner and a soulmate is a little bit creepy when coming from, you know, his people. They met one time and had spoken for 15 minutes prior to this announcement, and he says it twice in the same interview with Chris Wallace. I mean, he says the same statement literally at the front and the end of the interview, that she's a partner and a soulmate. And that's just, I mean, you know, like my wife said, ew, creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how else to, you know, to position that. I mean, it is, You know, my wife heard that. She was disgusted and horrified, really. And then she said, I wonder what he would have said with a male running mate.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it wouldn't have been the same thing, but who knows?
Yeah. Now, McCain asserts that 20% of our oil comes from Alaska. I don't know that that's very accurate. In fact, from what Lindsey Williams has said, they've basically shut everything down. You know, we have this emergency reserve that they claim they tapped into to get oil. So there's no oil production going on there,
mm-hmm.
as far as I can recall. If I remember political statements that have been made in regard to oil. As far as her record and her experience, she was mayor of a town of 9,800 people, and that gives her the leadership qualities to run this country? I don't think so. There's something very amiss in this. Now I also want to put forth the, I don't know if you would call it a theory, it's definitely a possibility, is that that the Republicans have something in mind for Barack Obama that's going to thrust Hillary Clinton back into the forefront. And keeping that in mind, there is a financial connection with the Bush dynasty and the Clintons in money laundering activities, something that the media just will not touch, but it's known throughout the rest of the world that this is going on. And it's a topic mm-hmm. that you and I have even discussed together on this show and on my show. And I'm thinking that the selection of a woman may be to counter Hillary's reemergence onto the scene. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that there's something going on there. I can't put my finger on it. There are a lot of weird things, anomalous, seemingly, that, you know, dots that just aren't coming together for me. And speaking of that, you know, I would go back to the death of Bill Guatney, the Arkansas mm-hmm. Democratic chairman who was shot at the headquarters. He was a superdelegate supportive of Hillary, who was supposedly throwing his support behind Obama. Then you have Stephanie Tubbs Jones, obviously, who was the representative from Ohio, who mm-hmm. Supposedly had an aneurysm and died. And she was also a superdelegate who was a Clinton supporter who allegedly had shifted her support to Obama. And, you know, others on the periphery that might or might not be related that were strange to me were Tim Russert's death. You know, he died of a massive heart attack on Friday the 13th in June.
Mm-hmm.
And Kent Snyder, Ron Paul's campaign chairman, who was the one person that Ron Paul credits as instrumental to getting him to run this go-round. A lot of people obviously influenced him, but Ron Paul himself said that Kent Snyder was the one who was instrumental in actually getting him to come out and run this time. And of course he died at the age of 49 of pneumonia, which is always suspicious to me. And even Ted Gunderson said that, you know, at the very least, officials, you know, Ted Gunderson, former, you know, FBI, said that law enforcement should consider it highly suspicious. So,
well, then you had Ron Paul's wife becoming critically ill herself,
right,
too.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I mentioned Guatney and Stephanie Tubbs Jones because, like you said, you know, with Hillary coming out, I don't know exactly how it ties together, but to me, it's all connected somehow. And I agree, you know, as we discussed earlier, Obama is on the, you know, he's on the forefront. He is the Democratic nominee, but, you know, kind of like over in Russia, you have Medvedev as president, but Putin is clearly the most powerful person in Russia right now, and it kind of seems the same way at least in the Democratic
mm-hmm.
foray, you know, that Obama is popular, but in terms of political clout. It seems like Hillary is in the lead, and I think I need to go wash my mouth out as I say that. So.
Speaking of Bill Guatney and Stephanie Tubbs Jones, now, you know, we're told that that Stephanie Tubbs Jones died of a brain aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what autopsy results show in her case. It would be interesting to see if those records are even available. And I find it quite interesting when I first heard about the Bill Guatney shooting that took place at the Democratic Party headquarters by a so-called volunteer that wanted to speak to him and was refused admittance into his office, burst through the door and began shooting. Doesn't seem like something a volunteer would do.
Right.
That individual was on a mission. That individual definitely was told to go in there and do what he did at any cost, even at the risk of his own life. So likely was someone who was mind-controlled, much like the school shootings that go on. It's something that parallels that. It mirrors that mindset. Now, that one could argue, well, the offer to be a volunteer to a political party was just a ruse to get in the office to do the deed anyway. But that individual, whose name escapes me right now, was hell-bent on doing that. And is it even a real person? Is the name that they put out actually the name of the shooter who they chased for 30 miles before killing him? Now, that prevents the story from being told. So there's obviously a mission. But in each instance, here we have similar circumstances, former Clinton superdelegates who shifted their support to Obama, which is the normal thing to do because Obama is the candidate left in the running at that point. And I know Tubbs Jones had shifted her support in June of this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know when Guatney's time was, but what I found terribly interesting in both cases, I suspected that I would read something about condolences from the Clintons.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And why was there no such condolences from Barack Obama in any of those articles? Why were they so quick to go to the Clintons to get their input? As if that somehow was going to exonerate them from any involvement in this. And what came to mind was the Clinton body count, especially with the shooting in Little Rock.
Right. I thought you were going to say the Cosa Nostra was what came to mind first, but anyway.
Well, regardless of how how it was accomplished, it reeks of political corruption. That's the main point I'm making. Do I have any proof of that? No, I have no more than anyone else.
Yeah.
I guess now you're pointing out that was Timothy Dale Johnson. Yes. So thank you for that.
Supposedly, like you said, was it?
Who was Timothy Dale Johnson? That would be. And they always have three names, don't they?
Yep.
You know, John Wilkes Booth.
Yep.
Lee Harvey Oswald. Always have three names. I guess the middle name is supposed to specify more accurately who that person is. There's probably 10 million Tim Johnsons in the United States.
Yeah.
But
I've often wondered if there's some kind of a financial connection, because as we know, it is a commercial system. And speaking of that, one of the things that I thought was astonishing, absolutely astonishing, I was looking through on FEMA at some of the Declaration of Disaster and Declaration of Emergency in the recent months and years even, And so far, by the way, there have been 49 major disaster declarations and 10 emergency declarations. I think it's important because of the superstructure they've imposed over the Constitutional Republic to, you know, install a de facto government by declaring emergency and disaster. Anyway, the point was I was going through some of these declarations, and in each one, there's a Federal Register notice. And the first thing that they list after the Federal Register notice, in other words, like, you know, this is the announcement. The first thing that's mentioned after that is not the date, is not, you know, the title of it, heading, subheading, or anything. The first thing listed is always the billing code. So I always wonder if, you know, maybe it's the three names so that you know, the right department gets billed, I suppose. Anyway, I know it sounds like a callous thing to say, but I don't mean it that way. It's just, you know, trying to observe the way that the system operates. So,
Well, going back, let's say, wrapping up some of McCain's comments, he makes, and I'm paraphrasing this now because it's a rather lengthy interview, and as I read through it, I tried to make mental notes of where some of these the most salient points were. McCain was talking about bringing the jobs back, like that's really going to happen. You know, we have a puppet that's more powerful than the other puppet. and I just don't see that happening. That's just totally disingenuous of the intentions. There's no intention of bringing jobs back.
Well, speaking of that, you know, the other puppet that is the, you know, candidate foisted on the American people that's also ineligible says that we're all going to get the congressional health care plan. So, you know, everybody's going to get the same health care coverage that Congress gets. And as the old adage goes, if you think health care is expensive now, wait till it's free. And, you know, you and I both, you know, intelligent people know that's I mean, that is absolutely not going to happen, not possible. So,
well, and they talk about universal health care for Americans, and what is going to be the prerequisite to receiving that? Is it going to be the acceptance of a vaccination that you would refuse under normal circumstances? In other words, the health care costs are going to be one thing for the people under the healthcare system, and they're going to be under something totally different, much more expensive for those that opt out of that. If that's even a possibility.
Yeah. Well, it probably won't be because, of course, you know, we all have to pay for, you know, everyone else's coverage, and I'm leaning toward a specific crowd that probably isn't taxed nearly to the degree, is fairly ignored, and they're brought in subversively into this country, and, you know, the illegal aliens is who I'm referring to. And so, you know, like Bastiat, if you prefer that pronunciation, said in the law, most people want to live at the expense of the state. They don't realize that the state lives at the expense of everyone. So, anyway.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's just, you know, what comes to mind, too, when I mentioned vaccines, the other day, it may have been as recently as yesterday, I read something that someone had sent me. I think it was Ken Adachi, actually, something he had posted on his site. A link to his site, which was discussing an individual who had received a vaccine, and some implants showed up in X-rays, and he's been harassed. Someone out of Chicago, in fact, he went through the legal system in Chicago. His father was a police officer, and I think he had a brother also that was a police officer. And he wasn't anti-police by any means, but for some reason he was selected to be injected. He was put into an institution underwent torture in a mental institution, electroshock, what they like to call therapy, and various types of injections, and immediately after receiving the injections, and subsequently being released, he noticed that at certain times of the day, traveling around, at work, when he was out and about, he was electronically harassed.
Hmm.
He was able to track it down to these implants that showed up.
Hmm.
And he described them as being something along the size of the tip of a ballpoint pen. And of course, this was some years ago that he received these, but now they're delving into nanotechnology and the tracking devices of microscopic size.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a warning to those out there that are about to be scared out of their wits into getting a vaccine under the auspice of a pandemic that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just more spin to get people into a state of fear.
Yep.
What are your feelings? I know you know you're familiar with the work of Ingrid Castle and Don Harkins in that area.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that, you know, the fear-mongering has been used so effectively. Speaking of that, I looked at Google Trends a while ago, at the trend of the talk of avian flu and bird flu, and there's a tremendous spike in the range of late 2005 to spring of 2006. And so within about a six-month period, it peaks, crescendos, and then drops off and basically goes quiet again. And what's interesting is that, in fact, I was just going to type that in real quick and see. I keep waiting for the uptick again, but I looked and I don't see it. I don't see it peaking again. Anyway, it really spiked in late 2005, and the reason that's significant to me is because, obviously, you know, from your interview with Vincent Bugliosi, he mentions the almost 1,000 lies the Bush administration told to, you know, lie us into a war that never should have happened.
Mm-hmm.
That was pre-planned, obviously, as we know, premeditative, but it's reminiscent of what the Bush administration did there, and that was a war that was planned prior to the Bush administration. Not to let them off the hook, but, you know, there's something going on behind the scenes, and so if this was played up, what happened during that time? And I conjectured for a while that it was a failed attempt. I don't think that's what was happening. I have since come to believe that they played it up to further impose the superstructure and basically flesh it out to a certain degree. That had already been imposed through FEMA and DHS, and the FDA, Department of Health Affairs, Idaho Pandemic Influenza Response, and it was published or put out in March 2006. I think a lot of these come from the think tanks, obviously, and they're put out at the right time. So the information was played up, and in the in this response manual, avian flu is mentioned several times. It's the only pandemic, so to speak, that's mentioned by name. And you mentioned Ingrid's work. She mentions Sherry Tenpenny and others who have done a lot of great work. And if you do any research at all, you can come away quickly with the understanding that you can't catch it unless you're a chicken. So, you know, so to speak, I mean, for us to catch it is a completely anomalous situation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if it's bioengineered, okay, maybe something gets away from the scientist in a lab. All right, well, I could entertain that for a second. But that's not something that we need to concern the whole country with, or is it? And if that is the case, then I would argue, fine, maybe that could happen. What are we doing mass-producing vaccines then for something that doesn't exist? Because even in their documents, they say you can't make a vaccine for these things that don't exist. They call them novel strains, basically. If some kind of a novel strain were to break out, then that might possibly jump, and that would probably be bioengineered. They even say in their own documents. But if that's the case, then why are we mass-producing vaccines for something that doesn't exist, or does it?
Yeah.
Or is it? Anyway, you know where I'm going with that. But I think that those things have all been imposed. You know, part of it was the fear, which has worked really well, and installing the control mechanisms because, again, you know, and this is the last point I'll make about this, I think that it's been used as a fear mechanism to install a de facto government. In the manual that I mentioned, and every state has one, obviously, it says that the Idaho Military Division's Bureau of Homeland Security is responsible for overall planning, direction, and coordination of statewide response operations. During a state-declared disaster, Idaho operates under an incident management system. This system is documented in Idaho's Emergency Operation Plan. And it says, and this is, to me, this is cleverly crafted. Tell me what you think of this statement. It says, all of Idaho's state government agencies participate in this system and provide support under the Idaho Emergency Operation Plan. During a state-declared disaster, the Idaho Emergency Operations Center is activated. So all, basically, it's total COG. All operations, all state agencies fold under this plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. Ever since we had 9/11, all of a sudden these emergencies have taken on a federal character to them, federal control and reduction of constitutional rights and freedom of speech and on and on and on. And it's down to the school level. It's even down to the birth level in a hospital.
Yeah.
Forced vaccinations and the incarceration of parents that refuse to permit their children to be vaccinated. Obviously, the public doesn't trust these things.
No.
And we're already out of time, but in wrapping up this issue about the vaccine and the potential mutant strains of the bird flu, I've heard of H5N3, which is kind of interesting. I'm going to have Dr. Bill Deagle as my special guest on Evident Footprints on the 4th, tomorrow night. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that and Morgellons and some of the other diseases that are out there and what some of their secret plans are. Dr. Deagle is pretty well-versed in many of those topics, so we're going to cover as much as we can in the show.
Could I give a word of caution real fast?
Sure.
We don't want to scare anybody, obviously. You mentioned Don and Ingrid's work, and I think it's wonderful. I would just say to anybody listening, if you haven't been able to pull your kids out of school, and it doesn't matter if it's public, private, charter, what have you, it all falls under these directives, and every state has one, go look it up. But just remember, as a strategic line of defense for your family, so to speak, that you know your kids have a certain number of sick days, and so do you at work. So don't be afraid to use them wisely, and hopefully everybody knows what that means.
That's a great, great solution. All right, Chris Hinckley, thank you for being on the TNT Hour.
Thanks, Don.
And I'll have you on again, of course. There's lots of issues that you and I seem to be able to discuss freely and revealing the light of truth where it's being obscured in the darkness in the mainstream. And we're not asking anyone to believe us. We're encouraging folks to do a little bit of research. If you're listening on the internet, you do have a computer, you do have access to Google, and much of the information that we get that way. So we encourage you to do a little homework, and you may come to the same conclusions. In the meantime, we want to wish our listening audience a great Wednesday afternoon. Look for me tonight on Evident Footprints. My special guest will be Billy Fay Woodard. And you can visit my website, directlightproductions.com, to find out a bit more about Billy Ray. And of course, read any of my articles published in the Idaho Observer, and quite a bit of news also. And we're going to be promoting infiltrators.com. Maybe I can have you on next week, and we're going to discuss the format of that, which is going to become a part of BBS Radio. And Chris, you're going to be a contributor. So I hate to rush, but we got to give Don the chance to put in a couple of promos and spots, get ready for the next show. And with special thanks to Don Newsom for doing the sound as well as making TNT Hour possible. In the meantime, everyone have a wonderful afternoon, and hopefully we'll see you tonight, 10 p.m. Pacific. Bye now.